to season 4, episode 4 of the Shenneybrook End PE Team podcast. You're here with me, Mr. Southwell. Mr. Doyle, good morning.
Good morning, all.
How are you, all right?
Very, very well, thank you.
Good stuff, Mr. Nash, good morning.
Good morning.
And we've got ourselves another guest this morning by popular demand based on feedback from the podcast. Mr. Tierney joins us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, let's go round. Let's see how we're getting on. How's the last week been in the lockdown?
It's been good. It's been interesting. Still trying to keep fit. Use lots of different creative ways to use what we've got in the house and outside open space. I have to say I'm missing sport. I am missing actual team sport, going out there, being able to have a kick around. It is definitely a challenge trying to keep sort of active without those things that you used to enjoy.
I second that. I think it's much of the same of what I've been doing over the last week, still trying to stay active in the little ways that we do. But I am missing competitive sport. And having been and worked at the small school only recently and got to have a game of badminton and a game of tennis, that was a welcome relief, if I'm honest, just to do a little bit more competition.
I'm going to say exactly the same. I've been teased this week with like sport being like advertised again a little bit more. There's been England Golf released their guidelines for how they want to restart the game, which makes you think there's going to be like an announcement coming, but then you don't know. And then I was in a small school, same as you on Monday. Just speaking to other people outside of my house was quite good. I quite enjoyed that. So it's all good. What about you, Mr. Tierney?
Missing school a lot, actually. I like you guys, have been into the small school, and it's been really nice to obviously be in the environment with other people, but also facilitate a bit of sport at the same time. It's been nice to see a bit of competition in there as well, which is always good to see.
Awesome. Well, we're going to come on to our main sort of topic today, which we'll link in a second, but we're going to grill Mr. Tierney first of all, find out a bit more about his interest in sport, and we've got three questions that we're going to ask him. I'll go with the first one, which would be, what is your favourite moment in sport ever?
Well, my mind immediately goes to goals. There's a couple that I think would nearly get there. The first one that comes to mind is the Lucas Moura goal in the semi-final last year against Ajax. The primary reason, Mr. Southwell, is because we were on a school trip. And your face when it went in on that school trip was something to behold.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's not quite making my cut. My top moment in sport goes all the way back to 2012 in the Olympics, and it was the Super Saturday. And basically, that 45 minutes combined peaked and obviously finished off by Mo Farah winning. That was amazing. And for me personally, I was in London that day. I wasn't in the stadium. Earlier on, I was at the women's triathlon and then come home and watched that on TV. It was an amazing moment.
That's awesome. That's
a great answer.
Sorry, question two, Mr. Nash.
I was just thinking about that 2012 example there, Mr. TK. I was stuck at a wedding that day.
No.
Stuck at a wedding. I bet the people getting married were thrilled.
Yeah, it was my mother in law.
Listening to the pot.
Mother in law.
I hope she doesn't listen to this.
So, our second question that we're going to ask any new guest, who's your role model in sport?
Other than Mr. Southwell, of course.
Well, that was the first one that came to mind. my one was Sir Alex Ferguson, easy. Just the leadership skills, he's been used in lots of case studies. He's done a bit of lecturing as well since he's left United as well. How he leads teams, man management, that kind of thing. I find it really, really inspiring in a way. Yeah, that's my answer. Quite boring.
No, that's a good one to pick there. You've got a bit of history on your side there, so
yeah.
Successful. We've got another question as well, and this one's going to be a little bit trickier. So, you've got to perform one sporting skill to save the world. What is that one skill?
I'd love to be able to say any of my golf swings, but we all know that's not going well. Even to get my personal best score, that's not my strong point. So, I'm going to go for a tumble turn in swimming.
Yeah, I
feel like I could get that, nailed down. I've got that in the locker.
I like that. That's a creative one. We're going to save all these as well and find out whose others are. That's really good. Okay, so we've got today's show. It's going to be all about esports. What do we know about esports?
Well, at the moment, we know that it is growing exponentially, really, in popularity, isn't it? I mean, it has been growing over a number of years. But at the moment in particular, I think the majority of sports clubs are having their official websites and social media accounts taken over by playing the game that was scheduled for that weekend in an esports format, such as FIFA or Football Manager, or I know that there's rugby versions of games and things like that that are happening, which is a unique twist.
So there's been plenty happening, and I've kept in touch with a few of these, and I did a little bit of research online as well. It's massive, and I think I'm starting for the first time to feel like I'm actually might be getting a bit too old to understand something that's going on in sport. Esports for me is a whole nother level. And I'm talking from a PlayStation 1, a Mega Drive, and now I'm seeing kids that are doing just all sorts of crazy stuff. Mr. Nash, you've got to be in a similar boat to us as well.
Yeah, I still like an online game. I'll have a go at gaming, but I've come to realise that, firstly, I'm not that good. My reactions are nowhere near that of some of the people I play against. And I know in the past, me and you, Mr. Southwell, have dabbled in some online gaming together, to realise that both of us are equally not that good. so it's always a challenge. But yeah, I think esports, I'm surprised how massive esports has become. Oh, I say surprised, it's obviously like the next thing that was going to come along, with people spending that time dedicated, and that's what sport is about, isn't it, really? You know, being dedicated to something, practicing again and again, you get better at it. And that's what these gamers are doing. They're spending a large chunk of their day practicing the thing that they're really good at, and then now earning wages, good money from doing what they love.
So we were looking last year, the kids were fascinated by Fortnite, weren't they? That was a big thing that was going out. And there was one fellow, wasn't there, getting paid tons of money just to play games online. And he was being sponsored, if he displayed a product in his stream whilst he was doing it, he was getting crazy money for it, like millions of dollars worth of stuff.
Well, got some stats here on that. In terms of, this is a big number to try and get, in terms of the number one awarding prize money for esports, it says Dota 2, I've never heard of them, Dota 2, but you are looking at $223 million has been earned over that young lady or young man's esports career. That is an obscene amount of money.
That's more than people earn in a professional career.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's a couple on there, I think, or is that, actually, hold on, I might just have to clarify, that might be a game and the prize money that's awarded within that, but it's still a huge amount. If you think the prize money that gets awarded within different leagues and sports and things like that, but there are some more familiar ones. Fortnite, for example, people that play Fortnite, the prize money awarded is $85 million. Dollars on that, so it's huge industry.
Definitely, and I think with, especially at the moment, obviously the times we're in, the numbers towards that kind of thing are going up. I've got a stat here that Twitch, which is one where gamers normally go on to stream, in March alone saw their viewership go up by a third because of the amount of people that are in quarantine. So it's giving these people who are streamers, who, you know, might be the esports players, the elite amongst them, it's given them a much broader audience, and people are getting involved and wanting to see this.
So there's been a couple of bits I've looked at online, and those sorts of ones that were like Fortnite and things like that have found themselves like a real home. And obviously I've been to Las Vegas a fair few times, and there's one hotel that had this huge esports sign on top of it, like you could see it from miles away. And I didn't really know anything about it, but when I went and actually had a look, it's like a 30,000 square foot gaming hall, and it's got on it all the different stations to be able to go in and play. It's got a broadcast centre based inside of it as well. It's got its own cocktail bar. It's got a 50-foot LED video wall, luxury VIP lounges, and I'm thinking, who's going to that? And you look on the clientele, and they've wrapped it up. It's like kids that are sort of 18 up to sort of 30, and it's incredible the amount of money that goes into it, but this purpose-built arena has been made, and they host like tournaments there. They've got their own online tournament calendar. It's incredible. It's like people watching people playing PlayStation.
Yeah, I had a student in year 12 last year at our school who actually did their extended project on the future of esports. Now, the way that he went about it was looking at whether or not it will kind of take over, if you like, or replace sports. But from the research that he did, it's incredible the amount of 70,000 seater arenas that they sell out. Actually, like you just said, getting people to watch other people play games, cheering for them. They've got team colours. They've got badges, they're logoed up, they're branded, the various teams that compete and sort of send in their competitors for these tournaments and things like that. There is very little difference in terms of, if you like, real sports, traditional sports and esports, when it comes to that feeling of belonging, that kind of social element to it. Yeah. You know, some would argue that actually it brings in a new demographic of young people who might not necessarily have the confidence and courage to go and test their physical skills as part of a basketball team or a swimming team or something, but actually they're able to do that in what they would consider to be something that's equally as skilled. And I suppose that's the argument for esports in that case.
I was looking as well. There's something else I missed, and Ash, you'll be interested in this as well. There's an e-Premier League of sports. So as an Everton fan, obviously you'll be looking out for their results. But I looked on the... It is really, really cleverly done. So I looked on the e-Premier League website. It's exactly the same as the Premier League website, but an e-version. It's obviously sponsored by them as well. And I was looking at the Tottenham page, and they've got a set of fixtures. They've got tables, leaderboards, brackets of who they play. And the sponsors they've got are unbelievable. They've got Tag Heuer, the official timekeeper of the e-Premier League. Barclays are the official bank of the e-Premier League. Coca-Cola, the official soft drink. The virtual match ball, sponsored by Nike. The official snack, Little Cadbury's. And then the lead partner is EA Sports. And every Premier League team has got their own e-Premier League player. It's incredible.
Now, do they have e-Premier League physios for those fingers? Surely, cramp up. You're going to have a thumb specialist.
Specialist, I'd love to see that.
Can I just say, obviously, bringing it back to sport, and that's what we all talk about. And this, the magic number that's always been banded around is about 10,000 hours, isn't it? That to become an elite or to become top at your skill or your sport, 10,000 hours. And I was thinking about that when we were going to talk about esports, and I was thinking about, right, okay, so if I want to become the elite at, let's say, in the Premier League esports and play for a team. Like my favourite team, obviously, Everton all the way. and I would need to spend, work this out, I need to spend 8 hours a day for 1,250 days. So I'm looking at 3.5 years of playing that same game for 8 hours a day.
And that's solid.
And that's, I mean, that for me, if those people are reaching the top of the game to be earning that sort of money, they are committing a large amount of time to one game. Now, I know my own view is I get bored very quickly, and so I couldn't spend all that time on just one game. So I sort of, their resilience, which we talked about last week, to just keep going back and trying again, and their commitment to things has got to be commended. That's legendary.
The thing is, as well, if that comes, you're playing in a new Premier League, what if you're no good at next year's game? Or they change, or they change the system, or there's a new, like... I just think things like that is such a dangerous career because you could, like Fortnite, I don't hear the kids talking about that anymore. And I think, oh, that must have died a death.
What happens if your hand gets slammed in a door?
It's the same as injury, isn't it? It's the same as anybody getting injured in a normal thing. But I'm going to counter this slightly. We've been quite positive on the virtues of it, talking about resilience and things like that. But if I studied, and I know people that have done this because they wanted to get ahead in their careers, but if I studied calculus and trigonometry for 10,000 hours a week and got really, really good at it and sort of won the mathletics tournaments that go on, I'm not calling myself a sportsman. And I think for the traditionalists amongst us, actually, I think this is the big question. Nobody's doubting the virtues. Nobody's doubting that it takes skill and it takes practice and it's popular and it makes money. That's not a problem at all. But why is esports called sport?
Well, I think that builds on something that I researched as well. There was actually some calls for esports to become a part of the Olympics, and some people had asked for that. Now, when I read that, I'll be honest, I was a little bit against it. I'm a bit purist in that way, and I wouldn't want to see it go down that way. I'm not doubting the skill required, but it definitely is something that I would want to keep maybe separate, and that we could maybe sees maybe the Esports Olympics, but I wouldn't want to see it together. What are your guys' opinions?
I'll start by saying the counter to that then, because I'm a traditionalist and I think we should keep what sport is about, what we generally believe. But actually, what is sport? And sport is competitive. Sport is about commitment. It's about training for things, practicing for things, getting out there, the willingness to want to win. And that's what esports is bringing. Yes, okay, we're not physically moving around. If we're saying that sports is you've got to get running around, get your heart rates up, and well, they're probably their heart rates do go up with adrenaline, but we're not saying that, you know, that's what sport is. I think esports could potentially be a sport. It's showing commitment. It's showing, is it any different to darts? Are we saying that darts isn't a sport? Because limited movement. Yeah.
That was exactly the next point that I was going to bring us on to, that this conversation isn't new. We've had this conversation about darts and about snooker, and we've had this conversation about sort of what other people, I say other people because I don't want to be controversial here, might have termed as sort of pub sports and pub games and things like that. Are they sport? Now, again, some of the purists would say, well, actually, we need to dig down and really classify what makes a sport. Is it something that raises the heart rate naturally through movement? And if that's the case, it does rule out some of those games and activities. Does there need to be a wider classification? Well, Mr. Tierney, you hit the nail right on the head. Does the audience and those that are involved in the Olympics believe that actually sport in that way meets the criteria? Because there are an awful lot of things that are genuine sports that are year on year on year vying to get their sport into the Olympics. Look at netball, for example. Not played all over the world, but significantly popular, massive sport in the Commonwealth Games, but has been vying to be an Olympic sport for years. And the livelihoods of netball players are directly affected because they don't get the funding from their national governing bodies and things like that. Whereas if you say, well, we're going to throw esports in there because it shows commitment. Mr. Nash, I've been showing commitment to my gardening very recently, but I don't think it should be an Olympic sport. And if I did that years after years, I'd be a massively successful horticulturalist, but I shouldn't be in the Olympics. And I'm trying to play devil's advocate a little bit and say, does there need to be a kind of a segregation between what is known as sport for the physical element of it and then what is known as entertainment, perhaps?
Hard one, because it's becoming so big. And I think the Olympics, if you look and get it as an Olympic sport, it's already so far removed from what it originally was anyway, because it's become a spectacle now. And my horrible feeling would be that if you demoed esports 1 year in the Olympics, it would get so much popularity that I think it would get in, rightly or wrongly.
Another interesting one is, we say esports. Now, if somebody was coming and playing FIFA, for example, then again, does that make a difference between what is actually considered to be the most popular participation esport, which is a game called League of Legends, which has nothing to do with the traditional sports? And do you say, actually, if people are competing online for those traditional games that are already in the Olympics or are known as sports, does that make a difference? Does the actual game that they're playing make a difference as well?
Yeah, so that, I actually looked at people's perceptions of this before the pod, and one of the things that was a criticism before it went into, well, when there was the discussion about it going into the Olympics, was whether the games are too violent. So it's not necessarily a game of FIFA or whatever that might be. A lot of the ones that are popular and the big hitters on the esports calendar are first-person shooters, and ones where the object is to wipe out an enemy. And whether that, and the basically the argument being that it's too violent for the Olympic Games.
That's true. And also, are we promoting something that actually as well, despite the skill and coordination level, does promote a sedentary and unhealthy lifestyle? And is that within the spirit and the values of sport, physical activity and the Olympic Games? And again, they're all counter arguments, but I think this is why there's not that overarching kind of guarantee that everybody's thinking that this is a good thing, despite the fact that it is so well backed, like you said, Mr. Southwell, by sponsors, and there's an awful lot of money to be made.
There is a huge amount.
Imagine if we, those at school, when we are back to normal systems, we offered an esports club where there was the opportunity to compete across houses, across form groups in a a virtual tournament of a game of our choice or whatever the students chose, it would be, I believe, probably one of the most popular clubs we would have. And that could quite happily run lunchtime, after school, before school. I think you would get the commitment to it because that's what is popular amongst the children that age, and that's what they enjoy. We know from working with MPE, there's been a reduction in people accessing our own extracurricular clubs for the sports that we offer. And maybe we need to maybe move with the times to offer the things that they do. But I stand by what you said there, Mr. Thorwell, about the fact that as PE teachers, we should be encouraging people to move, to not have that sedentary lifestyle and become lazy. And so there's a balancing act to be had. But I do think it could suddenly be a really popular addition to any school if that could be set up properly and there was the systems in place to do it.
I completely agree with you, and I think how I feel about it on a gut reaction to that really does signify how I feel about it. We have two extracurricular programmes at our school, don't we? A PE one, and we have a whole school, which is ones that are less to do with movement. I personally would be more than happy if I had the time to give it up to going and helping students, because like you, I think it would be one of the most well-attended clubs. However, if you ask me to put it on the PE extracurricular timetable, I would take offence, but I would suggest that actually it wasn't suitable for that timetable. It would be actually on the wider whole school timetable. However, hands up, I'll come in and I'll give somebody a go at beating them on FIFA instead.
I was going to say, we'll just ask the extracurricular league to just change it.
This is true, we could do that.
There is one other area to look at through eSports, and that's been its effectiveness during the lockdown, really, and providing the opportunity for people to see a bit of live sport. And I've really got into just looking at some of the professionals that have been playing eSports online. So I've been following the virtual Madrid Tennis Open, which has been pretty cool. And it's had, so Rafa Nadal entered it, Andy Murray entered it, Dominic Thiem. It was a proper full-on tournament, and there's been a men's and a women's competition.
And what were they playing? What game were they playing?
So they were playing a tennis game that came out for the PlayStation, and they were just set up. They weren't doing it in a big stadium or anything. They were just broadcasting from home, but they were playing with their own characters, but in the game. And it was a really good tournament. Andy Murray has ended up winning it. But what I thought was hilarious, Rafa Nadal had to pull out of one of the games due to injury.
Again?
So he had a sore back, so he had to postpone one of his games.
Do you know what? I nearly had to pull out of this podcast with exactly the same injury previously. Back support. I can completely get where he's coming from.
Yeah, it's been crazy. But I thought it's been a really good way of keeping people in touch with something, a bit of sport, which has been good. I know that there have been quite a few football ones as well that have happened. And there was a Formula One as well, I think.
Yeah, so the Formula One, I think I've been watching. It's really interesting that both there was a Premier League Invitational and F1 have been shown on Sky Sports over the last couple of weeks. And it's been quite interesting seeing the F1 kind of grid, the real F1 drivers take to it, because the Formula One sim racing circuit as an eSport is really present. And like, you know, there are teams that have set up with their own races that are sponsored by certain teams. I know, for example, Alfa Romeo, they all have them. And these sim racers have had the opportunity to race against Formula One drivers, and the Ferrari driver Charles Leclerc has won all four of them against other actual Formula One drivers.
How old is that?
And this has elevated his stock massively, all of the actual sim races. But what's been really nice to see is that these celebrities have got involved, or other sportsmen. So in the most recent one, Thibaut Courtois, former Chelsea goalie, and Ian Poulter have both had sims set up in their house and raced against F1 drivers. And that's what an amazing thing that is, to be able to compete on quite an elite level. You know, they didn't get whooped or anything. You know, they were fairly respectable. But to be able to compete against an actual Formula One driver, it's really impressive.
I watched a documentary not so long ago, and it was talking about the gentleman who races for McLaren, and showing his the sim setup that he has, and I was blown away by it, in the fact that he's got the full on seat, the steering wheel, everything happening, so it replicates pretty much what it's like to drive. I think it was something on like the Gadget Show show or something. I think they proved that still he didn't have the ability to be a real race car driver racing the track or something along those lines. But the skills and the knowledge they had of the tracks and how to drive those cars was just incredible. Blown away by it.
So very similar to how a pilot gets his hours or her hours when they're flying planes. They have incredibly sort of sophisticated detail to the simulators that they have in at home. They've got to do thousands of hours. And again, that links really back to the point that you made, Mr. Nash, earlier about the amount of practice you have to do. And again, I suppose it's really important to make sure that we say this does take practice. It takes skill, timing, composure, coordination. It takes lots and lots of the skills that actually even the most traditional of sports requires as well. Mr. Tierney, I suppose it's a good opportunity now to link in, because we like at the end of these podcasts to sort of link into what some of our students might be learning at the moment, and you're kind of leading on one of the units that this is relevant to.
Yeah, definitely. So for Year 10, Cambridge National Sports Studies, the unit that I studied at the minute is Sport and the Media. And actually, we've just been doing some notes on the different types of media within sport and how maybe they get used. And I think the two that are really prevalent at the minute are TV, obviously, and the internet. The ways that we've discussed, obviously, the F1, the Invitational, has all been on both YouTube, the internet, all the social media platforms have streamed it, and it's been on TV. As I said, satellite TV, subscription TV. So that's been an avenue for these sports to maybe gain a bit of income as well, a bit of promotion. Moving on to the next Learn Outcome, Learn Outcome 2 looks at the positive effects of the media and sport. Now, if we think about what has happened already in the last couple of months with the e-invitationals for FIFA. So there was the e-Premier League, I think it was hosted at the weekend, and there was basically each team submitted a player to take part and represent their team. And the final got to Diego Jota and Trent Alexander-Arnold. I think one of them beat Raheem Sterling in the semi-final. That, as a way of promotion for either the club or the person, could give them massive promotional opportunities. It could give them more financial viability going forward. They could be sponsored, for example, and obviously increased income for them or the club if there is that promotional aspect linked to it. Not to mention the fact that in these times where there's no competition directly at the weekend, the Premier League isn't going on, this is competition between people, players, clubs and sports. So there's the competition maybe at the weekend between who's going to watch the F1 eSport and who's going to watch the Premier League eSport. And we've still got that going on at the minute.
Psychological positive impact as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
On people, which is great. There's also for the Year 9s, I believe they're doing a technology and sport unit for sports science as well, aren't they?
I believe they are. Yeah, I think a lot of it looks at things such as like Hawkeye and how that might get used. But obviously, that is still present in the esports because obviously it's simulated. They still use them, replicate them.
In terms of training, and where we're talking about the F1 and having the simulators in there and being able to practice that way, I suppose that does have a link in with them. So really, really prevalent in what students are studying at the moment as well.
There's loads of ways of getting involved. One of my favourites, which is still going from when I was very small, is Football Manager, and it was known as Championship Manager.
Yeah.
And I am playing that at the moment relentlessly, so I'm trying to become a professional in that, I think. But I was looking online just at how often it's used, and there's obviously been stories of it being used by clubs to scout players. There's a couple of anecdotes there. So Jose Mourinho has used it before with his team as a scouting tool. And if you look at how many players are included in that game, there's no wonder why. There's like 799,000 different players that are involved in the database. And there are scouting teams that work for the game Football Manager bigger than some clubs. And I think that tells you how good of a tool that can be. I think that's massive.
It's extremely powerful, isn't it? It's a powerful tool to use. But it's a nice way of seeing how tech that starts out as purely that esports kind of element actually creeps into the professional game and being able to support it as well.
It also goes the other way as well, because there are some people who have played Football Manager relentlessly, like Mr. Southwell, and potentially gone into a club and got an analysis job. There are stories of these people who can show that they've got this ability to look at the stats and the data and actually get a job in a first team environment in football.
It's very strange because there's at least one of our former students playing on the game, and then there's at least one of our former students as a data analyst on the game as well.
I think there might be two now, actually.
So that's crazy. And that obviously, that must have had an effect at some point. They must have, like, you wouldn't grow up thinking, I want to be a data analyst. You've got to have, at some point, engaged with the technology.
So you might have said, when I get older, I want to be on Football Manager. And if you're not good enough to play, imagine going, clicking on that staff button and seeing your name on there.
Yeah, I think that sort of stuff's really cool.
Great aspirations. Brill. I suppose just to finish off with what's going on, there's been some talk about football restarting, as we said previously. The Hungarian Grand Prix has just said that they're going to do it behind closed doors, haven't they? Potentially. So we might get a race in August, I believe, and the Bundesliga may start, but the EFL maybe not so much.
Can I just say, I feel gutted that as the football specialist on this podcast, you've stolen my thunder there. So from now on, I'm stepping down from that.
I think the situation with football is the one that's going to dominate the press. Obviously, all sports got to kind of get back to normal. I'm really interested to see the fallout from whatever is announced from the football. That's what I'm most interested to see. I don't think I'm going to be going to a stadium this season to see a game of football being played. But what I am really excited about is, like, the sporting calendar from October, November. I'm going to watch 3 golf majors, a Ryder Cup, potentially the start of a new Premier League season. You've got all the rugby that needs to be caught up on and played. There's going to be loads going on over that period.
Mr. Southall, can I just ask, I thought about this the other day. Obviously, you're a season ticket holder at Tottenham. Have you been given a refund for those games, or have you been told that rolls over?
Our chairman is the stingiest man in the world. So, but they haven't said anything, and what they've done that was for the first time is they delayed payment for next season ticket, so it's on hold at the moment. And I think the way it works out is if they don't play another game, I'm £350 in credit, if that makes sense. So each game's about £65 each, roughly. So they've got a lot of money to recoup and probably lay out. So it'd be interesting to see how they do it.
Yeah. What one thing that got mentioned in the sort of the leak of the footballers from the English Football League who were talking about whether or not they would play through when their contracts ends and things like that, is they've said 66,000 tests for the coronavirus would be needed to complete the season in that league. And actually, there is a balance, and I think a really strong balance, because I'm undecided on this one. Do you, as a general public, accept that for 66,000 tests that won't then be available to others in different areas, key workers and things like that, does that make up for actually the fact that the amount of people that would get such a huge morale boost and lift sitting at home, staying at home, doing all the right things for months on end, who could finally get something to look forward to in their evenings and their daytimes by watching some competitive sports? Huge balance, but I think a really, really viable conversation.
So I think it'd be great to see some live sport back, but there's only really footballers that are talking about doing that. And if I ask Mr. National, do you care if football's coming back, what's he going to say?
Well, he loves it, don't give it to him, come on.
Well, I was going to say, my view on it was that I think sport does have that power to boost morale, but only if it's available to all. If you suddenly say, right, football's back on and it's on Sky Sports and you need to pay your monthly subscription for that, you're not getting everyone. Because people in those situations would be going to their local pub to watch it on a big screen, which they won't be able to do. So if you're going to do it and you're going to take the resource away, like you say, Mr. Burr, that 66,000 tests are going to be taken away from the public, then ultimately that sport needs to be public for all. It needs to sit within our TV licences.
That's a very, very good point.
I think the German league were doing, for every one test they used, they were going to buy 3 more for to go back into the public, which would be a reasonable kind of show of it. But again, we're only catering to one sport there. There's going to be other governing bodies that are going to want to get back up and running in some way. We're only talking about football restarting because of the money. If it wasn't down to money, we wouldn't be playing.
This is true.
Yeah, no, it's interesting about the Bundesliga going back, actually. I listened to a podcast that looked specifically at European football. What they were saying was in Germany, they're the closest to going back at the moment, primarily because of where their situation sits at the minute. But what they were saying is if they were to test everybody and they've set up some regulations, it would account for under 1% of that country's testing. And there was this big debate about whether that is worth it, essentially. Is that lack of 1% going to be worth it for that boost, whether people can watch it. And I think it's a real question, building on what Mr. Nash said about whether it's for everybody. Would you therefore want to tune in if there was no fans in that ground? Would people want to watch it if there's not that atmosphere?
I can tell you for 100% certain, if I had to look forward to watching two professional teams kicking around in an empty stadium this evening, I would clear the decks to watch it. It would be that much of a morale boost to go and see that. Actually, even sports that I'm not too keen on, or that I don't watch very often, I would genuinely sit down there and go, do you know what? Yeah, there's something to do tonight now. But again, just finishing off on the testing, the argument of 66,000 tests and how much that would cost, has that not been recouped by the strategies even before this that the Premier League clubs and the players were looking at in terms of either taking a 25 to 30% cut of their wages and then some of that money going to NHS charities, or the collective that the Premier League footballers all put together and said that it was going to be distributed lots of money. They were going to keep their wages at 100%, but they were going to donate significant sums towards NHS charities. Has that paid for the tests in the round, if you like, in a roundabout way? And does that come in and say, well, actually, yeah, let's get it going. Let's give people the opportunity to see it. I think the most important point was the one that Mr. Nash made there. Actually, yeah, I would be gutted if I had been furloughed from my job, was struggling a little bit, or even potentially have lost my employment at the moment, was struggling, couldn't go out and socialise and see people and do the things. And then Sky came and there was a paywall behind what all of my friends and family then were talking about in terms of what they could go and watch. That wouldn't necessarily be fair. So lots and lots of considerations there.
I think so. I don't know if anyone else has got anything to add on that, but it seems like quite a natural place to bring this episode to a bit of an end, I think. I will say, Mr. Tierney, thank you for your debut appearance.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it. It's been a pleasure.
Good work. Imagine the public will want you back on as soon as possible, so we'll have you back in then as well. Mr. Nash, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Cheers. Mr. Doyle, thank you as well.
Thank you as ever, Mr. Southwell. Appreciate it.
We'll see you guys next week.